It is Sunday evening, December 19th, 1999. We're in the Absolute Monastery, and I sort of expected that you would be all set for this or that type of activity, but you appear to be all set for a talk. And talks are fun too. Mm-hmm. No?
No. Like you said the other day, an out of body journey can be done in sitting position.
Oh yes.
So that's why I thought you're ready for anything.
All right.
Whatever, in a river.
Very good. Oh, the river, huh? I wrote down a different title. Perhaps the river will express itself in it, and then after we have the talk, then perhaps we'll be ready for a beautiful out-of-body journey too. In fact, I know we will. Ellen was bending my ear on the telephone, reading me a letter from a worthless person who is absolutely no good, has no self-integrity, no self-worth, no direction in his life, just plays his game however rough he can play it. And that's okay. And I worked with him for about a year. And he was very interested, but not really interested enough to do something about it. I told him how to change his life to accomplish the goal that he said he wanted. He said he wanted a goal of being a businessman. He said he wanted the goal of being successful. And then he continually told me stories about his escapades of robbing and stealing and taking things that didn't belong to him. And I said, Red, that just doesn't sell. You can't do that. If you want to be a successful businessman and you want to be accepted by the community and respected by the community, then you have to cooperate. Now, if you go to a land where robbery and thievery is accepted, where this is the modus operandi of the community, then you would be in good shape. But you want to live in a world where your parents are, where your sisters and brothers are, where your family is, where your girlfriends are. You want to live in a community where people respect you. And you told me how they respected you for having done a few noble things. And while you were doing these noble things, you kept your eyes open for the valuables. And when they weren't looking, you took their valuables. Now, that hardly fit the picture. And so he went home one time. And continued his nefarious ways and went back to prison for a longer term. Now, he's not a bad person. He's just a person who never had anyone who cared enough about him to be an inspiration to him, to guide him, to open his mind and his heart to something beautiful and something good. Now, he's like all of the people there who are in prison, all, like a majority, who want their family to send them radios and televisions, who want them to send writing paper, pencils, who want them to send them all these toys. But they show no sign of going a new direction. I'm not worried about remorse, that's another story. But they show no signs of going a new direction. And so I say, poof, write them off. They're not worth anything. They're not important. We should just toss them to the dogs. The world would be better off without them. And this is true, isn't it? The world would be better off without people who were inharmonious with society. Well, if society really believed that, then society would have the penalty that some of the other nations in the world have. In some of the other nations in the world, if anyone is caught stealing, off of their head, they're dead. If anyone is caught doing anything against the law, there is no other penalty except death. And you can believe it, in those societies they have very few people violating the rules. Now that's very strong. That's very strong. But it's a very good program. Because the people who violate the rules are no good. The people who violate the rules are unworthy of being given a second chance, or a third chance, or a fourth chance. Because of one thing. These people have not been taken under the wing of someone who cared for them unconditionally and walked with them mentally through the new world that stood before them. I walked with a number of people through their new world to show them what values could be adhered to, or what values could be gained from cooperating with the world and forgetting the ways that they had had before. And as I walked with these people, I became their God, unfortunately. I became their mentor. I became their father. I became their friend. And a few wrote and talked with me and said that they would like to walk the way that I had shown them. And they took our course. But as you well know, taking the courses doesn't end up with you accomplishing the goal that you set for yourself. But they're really not worth it. They really should just be shot, hanged, killed, whatever, you know, because this is what it's all about. You either follow the rules or you're dead. Is that true? Is that true that we either follow the rules or we're dead? Well, a lot of people think that. They have what's called the death penalty in this country for people who do certain things, and that's done. They're put to death. In fact, many countries have that. What is it that could be done for all of these people that could move them into a better way of living, that could give them a light at the end of the tunnel for their life? Number one, are they worthless, useless beings? And the answer, of course, is no. They are worthless if we look at them and see them as worthless. They are unredeemable if we are unredeemable. If our attitude is such that we limit them, that we judge them, that we say that they are not worthy of pursuing a better life. And we sometimes say that. Now, can we change our attitude? Can we look at this? Now, you all claim to be practitioners, and that's beautiful. If you went into a hospital ward and you spoke to someone who was right on the very edge of moving on, their body was all shriveled up and they were in great pain and they wanted to go, and yet they said to you, "Oh, if I could only live. I have so much I'd like to live for. I have so much I'd like to do." And you, in your objectivity, or lack of objectivity, look at that person and you say, "My God, they haven't a chance." You're doing the same thing that you do with a criminal. You say, "They don't have a chance. They're too far gone. They're at the bottom of the heap. They're just shot." And so you disband them. You release them. How many times have we released someone when we went in to visit them and they were on their deathbed, and deathbed was the moment of death? We said, "Okay, go." How many times have we said that? And when we say that, what are we doing? We are giving up. Can we ever give up? Can we ever take the privilege of being eternally alive away from ourselves or another? Can we ever pretend that this is the end? We do. And we have a lot of fun doing it, because it's not us. It's not us that's dying, it's somebody else. And so, when we do that, we are saying that life is not eternal. When we do that, we are saying that our bodies are unworthy of being cared for. When we say that a person who is in prison for doing something that is difficult, but he's serving a long term or she is serving a long term, are we going to give them our very best? Are we going to be their mentor? Now, several of you have written letters to men in prison that I've introduced you to, and you've written friendly letters to them, but you haven't taken them in your heart as being their mentor. You just took it as a pretty thing to do, to write a lovely letter to them and say lovely things to them, but you didn't take it in your heart to say, "I will be a mentor for this person. I will be someone who works with this person, who shows them the way, who sees them as whole and perfect, who sees them as the risen Christ." My goodness, that much. Yeah. Mm-hmm. "I will be a mentor." When I dealt with these men, I was a mentor to several thousand of them. And many of them made tremendous changes in their life. And at the same time, I was working with each of you. And yet, you didn't say, "Herb, you're doing too much. You're working with too many people. You're reaching out to too many people. You're touching the lives of too many people. And too many people are having changes in their world, recognizing who and what they are." You never said that. And when I asked you to do things for some people, you sometimes found the time to do it, and sometimes you didn't. Which is okay, because I am not your God. You are your own God. You're your own divine being. But when you have the opportunity ever to be a mentor to anyone, to be someone who is their role model, someone who is their inspiration, someone who shows them a light at the end of the tunnel where before they saw only darkness. Will you take it? You see, the opportunity comes to us every once in a while, and we never know how much of a difference we're going to make in the lives of others. We never know why we bother doing things for them. Now, you were involved in a number of different people, and you were helpful to them, and you were loving to them, you wrote to them, and you sent them little tidbits of this and that. But did you ever say to them, "I stand with you as you go through this growing experience of finding the river that lies within you of your purity and your divinity"? Have you ever felt that? Have you ever expressed that to anyone else? Have you ever taken the time to reach out and touch someone like that? We write pretty letters and we answer them, and we give them a lot of garbage. You're whole and perfect, you're wonderful, and you're this and that. And that doesn't mean anything to them. We say to them, "How are you today?" And they say, "Well, I've been suffering with a cold." And we write back and we say, "Well, they say that a cold is a thought. And sometimes if we change our thoughts, the cold goes away. Have you considered that? Think about that once. I like to see you whole and perfect because that's the way I am. And if you can say of yourself, 'I think my thought and the power of the universe vibrates to manifest it,' wow, what a wonderful little tool. This is early in the game. Later on, that tool is not as effective because we reach beyond it. But in the early game, that's a very effective tool. That's like saying, 'Jesus will take your hand.' And really, it's much better. Jesus said, 'It's done unto you according to your belief.' And it's much better if we can give them a belief in something, in themselves, and in who life really is for them, and watch the miracles happen. Now, my words are not meant to chastise you or to put you down. My words are meant to say, are you willing and ready to play the game of a master, of a mentor? Presently, the word mentor is being bantered about in a very pleasant way by several organizations. They're saying these young men are being mentors to children here and there. The basketball great will go and be a mentor to a class and show them how to shoot baskets and show them how to play the game. A machinist invites some young boys, 8, 10, 12 years old, to come into his machine shop to show them how to run machinery and how to make silly things and how to have fun. And he's not there to educate them. He's not there to teach them something that they're going to use all their life, although that's what he does do. He is there to inspire them to be the finest that they can be. He is their mentor. He is the one who says, "Hey, you guys are great," or, "Hey, you're wonderful." And he gives them a hug. And the same with young ladies who play the mentor role too. They go to areas where children are without mothers or fathers, and they act as a mentor. There are older people, grandparents, who have no grandchildren of their own, but they go and take these young children on as a surrogate grandchild. And they take the child to the movies, they take the child to the park, they take the child out and let them have grandparent feeling. And as the child has this feeling of being loved, just for himself, not because he's going to be smart in school or because he's going to behave, but just because he's a nice guy or she's a nice girl. They're loved. They're loved by a stranger who doesn't remain a stranger very long, but a very important asset in their life. And what happens to them as they're having this experience? As the mentor is having the experience, the mentor feels grander and grander and grander all the time. The mentor feels that he or she is giving something so stupendous because they're touching the hearts of these children. Why do you think I play the game of Mr. Candle? Because I want these children to be good? Because I want these children to have morals or principles? Because I want these children to like me? Or because I want these children to like themselves? To like themselves and like their parents? To like themselves and like their teddy bear? To like themselves, to cuddle themselves, to hug themselves, to appreciate themselves? These Mr. Candle tapes are not just as a pleasantry. They have a very deep, significant purpose and meaning. And they're on the web. And perhaps no one will ever see them. Or perhaps a few will see them who will be touched by them and their lives will be improved. Or perhaps thousands will see it. It doesn't matter who. I am doing it for me. I am reaching out and loving through Mr. Candle. And it's a very wonderful thing to do. I am reaching out with the Dial of Healing Word every Monday morning, putting on new Dial of Healing Words. And people listen to it and they think to themselves, I'm all right. I'm a nice person. I have qualities about me that are good. I'm desirable. And that's pretty wonderful, isn't it? That's pretty wonderful. We have a lot to give. We have a lot to share. We have a lot to be. And if we take one person each week as our little mentorite and work with that person by phone, by person, however, and we bring a star into their heart. We bring a light into their lives. We bring an inspiration into their experience so that they begin to like themselves and they begin to like their world and like all the people in their world. Can you do that? Oh, but I'm a monk and I'm not allowed to do that. I have limitations on me. Hey. What kind of idiot to take me for? You have the opportunity to answer the phone often, all of you, wherever you are. And as you answer the phone, someone could be calling you and saying, I hurt. And you say, tell me about it. Not to listen to the hurt, but to let them talk. Because your ears are tight closed to all the things that are negative. And then when they finish telling, you say, you have certainly something to work with. What do you think you should do about it? Not offering your super intelligent advice of what to do, but what do you think you should do about it? And then the person says, well, that's what I was calling you for. I wanted your help. I wanted your advice. Yeah, but what do you think you should do? Well, and you see, you gently persuade them to think what they think they should do about it. And you don't say, look, I asked you a question, now answer it, just stupid jerk, or get off the phone, you know. Well, thanks a lot, you know. Of course, this is what goes through your mind and heart sometimes when you are cold. But when you are warm and loving, you will listen to these people, not hearing them, but listen with love, unconditional love. And then as you say, now what do you think we should do about it? Well, I need some money and I need this. That's fine. Now, where do you think you're going to get the money from? From you! Well, why do you think I should give you the money? What makes you think that I believe in you? I'd like to believe in you, but what makes you think I should believe in you? What makes you think anyone in the world should believe in you? Well, I'm a good person. That's a good start. Why are you a good person? What have you done? And you see, you work with this person. This is ministering to them. This is mentoring to them. You care about them. You don't really care about the stories they tell you. If you care about the stories they tell you, you're in trouble. What you really care is how Socrates cared. How Socrates spoke to his people. What the subject was inconsequential. What their attitude about the subject was, that was consequential. That was very important. Now you have this same opportunity. You have the same opportunity as we were talking this morning, how you never know. Sylvia picked up this little flyer as she was walking through the store. And as they were driving along, she looked, oh, look here. Here's a 2-for-1 coupon. How interesting. Now, why did she pick up that flyer? Because God in her said, Sylvia, take that flyer. There's something important in there for you. No, she just picked it up because it was just something that she does. She picks up flyers. And sometimes she throws them away and sometimes she reads them. But when we place ourselves on the love block, on the unconditional love block, everything comes to us to fulfill it. Are you ready to be unconditionally loving? This is part of the training that you're working on. This is part of the picture that you're working on. Now, Mr. Hess wrote, called rather, quote, he wrote, and he wanted us to send him a radio. He said he doesn't have a radio. He doesn't have anything to do. He says they're very inexpensive there. Well, when you tell me you want a radio, what do you do? Do you ask for money? Or do you ask for a radio? Now, I could presume that he, in asking for money so he could buy the radio there, which he says are very cheap, was going to take that money and perhaps use it for drugs. Because in the prisons, drugs are so easily available. It's a shame. But do we contribute to a person's drug habit? And the answer is categorically no. So, now, if we were to send him a radio, would he take the radio and sell it, that's why they're so cheap, so that he could go and buy some drugs? Possibly. Are we going to work with him first as a caring person to understand him, to back him up, to He says he doesn't know where his mother and father are. He doesn't know where his family is. He doesn't know where his friends are. He is bereft. Now, why is a person bereft? Because they have abandoned everyone. They have abandoned everyone. They haven't written to them. Now, he certainly is a worthless, good-for-nothing person, isn't he? No. The fact that he wrote, and the fact that he sent his love, and the fact that he said he loves to hear from us, the fact that he is getting the gist, I presume, the fact that he is whatever he's doing, shows that he cares enough. He made that step, that inroad. Now it's up to us if we want to make our inroad and talk with him and share with him. Now, he would like to call us collect because they can't use an 800 number there. Prison doesn't allow the use of 800 numbers because the guys would be calling everybody on the 800 numbers to the disdain of many businesses. But he could call collect. And he could talk and share for 2 or 3 minutes, for 5 minutes. And what would happen? Would we, in talking to him, say, well, now, you shape up, and we can't send you money because you're going to use it for drugs? Never. We would never mention one thing about that. Because if we did, we would be limiting him. What we do is to be loving. What we do is to be Socratic. What we do is to open up our hearts so fully, so wonderfully, so specially that he knows where we're coming from. He may ask for the moon, and we'll only give him the stars. He may ask for things, and we'll give him love and attention. And after a while, he will find that this love and attention is far more valuable than any things that he might have. We have another friend, Roger. And Roger is always saying he wants to have drawing materials or writing materials or this or that or the other thing. And is that what he needs? Is that what he needs? Not in the least. What he needs, if need is the word, is to know that somebody cares about him, for him. Now, you are a human being. What if somebody cared about you just for you? What if somebody said, Christina, every time I come near you, I feel so good? And they don't want something. They might just be brushing against you as they're working. You work in the same place, and they brush against you, and they say, every time I come near you, I just feel like there's something beautiful about you. I don't know what it is, but it's wonderful. And then they go their way. It's just sort of a momentary thing. And then later, it comes again. Why is it whenever people come into my world, they immediately want to shake my hand? They immediately want to put their hand on my shoulder. They immediately want to put their arm around me and be my friend. They don't want to be my friend. They want to be their friend. They're putting their arm around my shoulder to feel my love and my vibrations and my happiness. And they continue to do it. They continue to do it, even like our builder. He did the same thing, and his staff did the same thing. He had these two Indian boys working for him, And they're big, tough, rumble-tumble guys. And they came up to me, and they had to touch me. And they had to put their hand on my shoulder, and they had to say, "Hey, you're all right. You're a nice guy." You see, they had to say this because there's something about our sharing, our loving unconditionally. Can you do that? Can you go out and share unconditionally? Be a loving center. You don't have to touch people. Let them touch you in all the beautiful ways that they can. Very gently, very caringly, very properly. And when they do that, then what happens to you? You have within you that power, that courage, that love, that joy that radiates out and they feel it. Now, Gertrude taught a class for years and years and years. And she would come up to her students and she'd put her hand on their shoulder while they're sitting at their desk. And the child would look up at her with that beatific look on its face and say, "Hi, you know. Hi, Mrs. Souter. How are you?" And she'd look down at this child and she'd say, "I'm just fine. I'm so proud of the work that you're doing. You are just wonderful." And she'd go to the next child and say virtually the same thing. But her class was filled with students who had her not only as their teacher, not only as their friend, but as their mentor. Someone who drew out of them their finest and their best. And as she drew this out of them, what happened to her? She was like a house on fire, just warmly glowing, just fantastically experiencing this. House on fire sounds sort of destructive, but the burning bush that didn't burn, remember? When we reach out with our love and touch the world, even without making physical contact, the world is such a better place for us. Are you willing to reach out and touch someone? Ingeborg does this all the time. She goes to her neighbors and she's a sparkling little blossom of a flower with each one. And each neighbor wants to have her come to their house. Each neighbor wants to rush to open the door if Ingeborg is coming with a package in her hand. Each neighbor wants to watch her while she's swimming and says, "You are marvelous swimming in that cold water. You are such a great, great, great lady." And she doesn't dare shiver as she comes out because she is warmed by their love and their admiration, their respect. And so then these people say to her, "Why are you always happy?" And she says, "Because I like me." And they say, "How do you like you? How can we learn to like ourselves? How can we be that way?" They may not use those words, those are the simple words I use, but they would use other words and they'd say, "I like to be near you, you're a nice lady. Come and have coffee or dinner with us, you know. Come and be part of our family. Don't ever go away. Don't ever leave us." And of course, that has nothing to do with Ingeborg. She's going to do whatever she's going to do because it's right for her to do it. But wherever she goes, she will build up this reservoir of beautiful beings that surround her and love her and appreciate her. You know, from our experiences with Ingeborg, she has not been a very outgoing, bubbling person. She has not been a person who likes to, well, yes, I guess you do. You do like to greet new people and make them feel at home. you do like to go to seminars and to conferences and get the names and addresses of everyone. You do like to make a nice show for the University of Healing. In truth, this is her nature, and that's beautiful. You see, you are a giving person, and that givingness is showing itself so beautifully to you now in your neighbors and friends that you have built up in El Cajon. And that's beautiful. Now, Sylvia's experiences are just a little different. Sylvia is an outgoing, giving person too, but Sylvia is not as gregarious as you are. You give to everyone. Sylvia gives to a few. And so she has a few people, like she's like in the Marines, you know, they want a few good men. But she gives to a few people this loving, mentoring self, and these few people are finding her an inspiration. And that's beautiful. But what about you? What about you, each one? When you have a telephone call, do you say to the person, what do you want? And they say, I want a gist. You say, what's your name and address? And they give it to you, and you say, thank you, goodbye. Or, when they call up, do you know that there's more to that call than just asking to be put on the mailing list? And you say to them, how is everything going in your life? And they say to you, well, I've had a few problems. And then you say to them, and what have you been doing about solving those problems? And they'll say to you something or other, and then you'll say to them, that sounds wonderful. What else have you been doing? How else have you been planning? And you see, when the telephone call of maybe 2 or 3 minutes is finished, they will think you, who talked with them, is the greatest person on the face of the earth, and quite likely they will respond to some of the suggestions that you have made for them. Do you follow that? That's being a mentor. A mentor doesn't care who they meant for. They just mentor. They just give. And when my son was a little boy in the Cub Scouts, we lived in Corona del Mar where most of the parents were divorced. And so the boys would come up to me and grab on me and they would say, you know, hi, we like you, you know. And they'd say to Mark, aren't you disturbed that they're all grabbing your daddy? And he says, no, I have them at home. And this is true. You see, when you're a mentor, you reach out in love. You don't ignore your own children. You just reach out and bless everyone. How many of those children that were in the Cub Scout troop that I had back in Corona del Mar those years, how many of those children are grown adults now, all of them of course, and remember the mentoring that was done with them? Specifically, perhaps not, but it touched their lives because I was teaching them all to be gentle, to be generous, to share, to look at everyone as a beautiful person, to find good in every person that they talked to or saw. I was giving them all these beautiful thoughts, and I would say, now, what good did you find in him? What did you share with him? And things like that. And it was amazing the things that they came up with. I imagine a lot of it was out of their imagination because they felt they wanted to say something nice. But a lot of it came out of their real experiences. And the things that came up in their imagination were teaching them what to do in real life. Because sometimes our imagination is the foundation for what we do later. If you're a loving person in your imagination, if you're a beautiful person in your imagination, you can be sure you're going to be a beautiful person in the physical world. It's that simple. It's that beautiful. But it's up to you. It's up to me. Are we going to be mentors? Are we going to practice what we're learning? Are we going to reach out? I have always said we should just be proctors and not individuals as we're working on the student lessons, because the students would have a tendency to want to have the same proctor all the time. They'd always want the same individual because they felt that warmth and that love. But that way they would miss the warmth and love of other individuals who were equally good proctors. And this is important to do too. So, that might be changed. The proctor might have a name and be known. You know who one proctor is that is very famous? Dear Abby. Abigail Van Buren. And do you know who writes the Dear Abby column? Because this is a Dear Abby column written in newspapers around the world, a syndicated column, and there are maybe 10 or 12 different items that she covers in every column. How does she have the capacity to do that every day? She has a team of writers working with her. And she just looks over what they say and makes a few editing, polishing marks, putting her trademark on it, and lets it go. She is not really writing to all these people, but she has, over the years, done this. And she has built up within her a capacity to instantly respond to people beautifully. But you're not always talking to Dear Abby. You may think that you are. I'm sure there are people like that in European newspapers and in Asian newspapers and all over the world, because it's a very pleasant and a very meaningful column, because they talk about things that parents should talk with their children about. They talk about things that are going to uplift their life. They're mentors. Dear Abby is a mentor for every person who writes in. Maybe a short-lived mentor, just one letter, but a significant mentor. If you ever wrote a letter to Dear Abby, and your letter was published in the newspaper, and the answer from Dear Abby was published, you would memorize that, you would learn that. For all of your life, you would say, oh yes, I wrote to Dear Abby, and she answered it, you know. All of your life, you'd say that. All of your life, you remember a person who played the role of a mentor, a person who lifted you up, who cared about you when you were facing difficult circumstances. You will always remember it. So think about what you're going to do and how you're going to be an abbot. How you're going to be an abbot, yeah. How you're going to be a mentor. How you're going to talk with people. How you're going to share with people. We go over to Bill's church, and as we go over there, we meet all these people, and they come up with all of their problems. And do we fluff them off, or do we say to each one of them, now tell me how you're handling that. That's amazing. You're wonderful. Now, how are you going to work through this out, or how are you going to do that? Showing an interest. And they come up with an answer. And after they come up with their own answer, do you know what they think about you? They think you are the most loving, caring, intelligent person in the world, because they blame you for the answer that they gave to themselves. And in doing that, they remember you with love. They remember you with respect. They remember you with all the kindness and all the joy that's in their heart. Now, what do you think we should do about Red? Do you think that we should answer his letter?
Yes.
Why do you think we should answer his letter?
Because we choose to.
Yes, because we choose to, yes. Anyone else?
Because we care.
Well, let's take it on the simplest basis. We're answering his letter because he wrote.
Yeah.
No.
And because we care.
And then, how are we answering his letter? Because we care. We're not answering it with just a simple yes, no, yes, no. We're answering it because we care. Now, I had a friend who wrote me letters, and in her letters she would tell me of her problems. And she would say how her problems were so terrible. And then she'd say one thing in her letter, like she just got a new ribbon for her hair. And I spent the entire letter answering her, saying how wonderful you got this new ribbon in your hair. It must look beautiful. How nice it must be as you're walking down the street and all the birds are eyeing that ribbon with envy, thinking it looks so beautiful in their nest. And how the butterfly wants to come and light on that ribbon because it matches the color of his wings so beautifully. And how every man, woman, and child walking down the street, their eyes sparkle as they look at the glorious ribbon in your hair. You see, what would you think if you got a letter like that?
Wow!
Well, in the first place, somebody cared. Mm-hmm. And in the second place, somebody didn't care to speak about the negatives. And so, little by little, she stopped writing negatives. Little by little, she only wrote positive things. And she kept getting beautiful responses to the positive things. You see, that's how we do it. And this is how we do it with Mr. Hesse. We give him positive responses to everything he's doing. We see him master of his habit. Now, isn't that interesting? Now, how could we say, I see you master of your habit, when we have no idea what his habits are? Well, we can still say it, can't we? Mm-hmm. You are master of your habit. And what did he say in the letter? He said, I'm getting older. And that's true of all of us, isn't it? But what could we say? We could say, every day you can see yourself looking younger and younger and younger, if that's what you'd like. Now, why do you want to look younger? Because you want to be younger? Why do you want to look younger? Because you want to feel younger? What does it feel like to feel younger? And he lives in his cell in prison, and he has this little two-man cell with, or maybe it's four-man cells now, they're making some changes because so many people in prison. Four men in one little tiny cubicle. That's rather depressing. But he can see himself a happy, joyful, harmonious being. You can say to him, you are, not you, but everyone is so blessed to have you near them and a friend to them in prison, because with your positive attitude, with your joyous attitude, you're spending all of your time talking to other people, sharing with them, telling them how wonderful they are. They are so fortunate to have you. Now, what if he wasn't doing that? Do you think you might inspire him to do that?
Yes.
Do you think that seeds planted take root and grow? Mm-hmm. Do you think that it would be a benefit for us to make a glorious experience for him by opening up his eyes to who he really is? Could you imagine that? Mm-hmm. Just imagine that. Now, do we want any credit? If we want credit, we're in the wrong game. We make them sound so wonderful that they don't even have the slightest idea what we look like. Now, we may send them our picture, which is not desirable. Why is it not desirable to send our picture to someone?
They start worshiping.
They begin to have their fatted calf, or their golden calf, and they start worshiping, and they start holding that picture up of you and saying, I see you sending me gifts. I see, almost like voodoo, you know. They don't know that they're, maybe they do, but perhaps they don't know that they're doing that. But that's what happens. That's what happens. Why does anyone have the picture of Bhagwan in front of them, or Sai Baba, or Jesus, or anyone else? Because they feel that they can be closer to that consciousness by having that picture there. And being closer to that consciousness, they can encourage that consciousness to be generous with them. Why did everyone like having my picture there? Because they felt that I would be generous with them as I was when I worked with them. I was always generous with them. But that's not the answer. That's not the answer. To be generous with our thought, our word, and our action, that is the answer. But with our substance, no. Why are we not generous with our substance? Because we are not their source. What would you think Ellen received this letter if Ellen were to begin saying right now, I see you independently wealthy? What would happen if she began doing that? He would have money coming to him from areas he never dreamed it would come. He would have a consistency of income that would be unbelievable. Do you see? That's the principle. And that's the principle that we're working with. What kind of a mentor are you? Do you want to be a mentor? Do you want to give out from that unstoppable river of divinity within you? When we're finished with our talk this evening, we're going to take an out-of-body journey into the river, the divine river within us. And we're going to puddle and paddle around in that river. And if you remember, Christina, Stefan held on and grabbed for your arm and said, take my hand. And you didn't want to take his hand. You wanted to do it yourself. And finally, you took his hand. And then you both broke loose. But this is what happens. This is what happens. We give of this inner river and we let it flow. And we don't care for return for ourselves because we just let it go. Know that for yourself now. Know that for yourself. And tonight, practice being a mentor for yourself. What would you say to yourself about being happy, about being independently wealthy, about being marvelous? Practice hugging yourself. Practice loving yourself. And when you do that, then you'll know how to be a mentor to someone else. I love you.